Congratulations to the Montreal Canadiens. They are the champions of the Scotia North Division. That will dominate the headlines on today's program. We'll also talk plenty about what happens next with the Winnipeg Jets. Mull over what has happened between the Islanders and the Boston Bruins. There have been some fines. There has been a suspension upheld. There is Justin Bourne, and I'm just looking at my show sheet, and an Anthony Stewart?
Stewart.
How do you... Stewart? Stewart. No, Stewart. Anthony, new phone. Who dis?
Doing well, guys. How are you guys doing?
Welcome home, bud. Welcome back. Anthony Stewart here, back on the program.
It's like the kid that goes away for college and comes back at Christmas. You're supposed to be welcoming with opening arms, not like...
Yeah, as you come in with like a basket full of laundry and empty pockets and wants $20
and
can I borrow the car as well? Yeah, we know. We've all done that before, Stewie. We're all good. Well, listen, welcome back to the program. We tried to keep it going as best we could without you, and we are richer now for your presence on it. Ken Wiebe's going to stop by. He covers the Winnipeg Jets for the for Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. We'll talk about what's next for the Jets. But a quick thought, and Stewie, you're the new kid. We'll go to you first on this one, and then Borny jump in. I don't know that even if you picked the Montreal Canadiens, you would have picked sweep. But there it was. Stewie, you open us up. Your thoughts on what we just saw the last four games.
We saw a team playing a club, and say what you want about the Montreal Canadiens, they banded together and did what it took to win, you know, a fairly easy series. And, you know, I think it goes back to our conversations earlier on in the season when people talk about Carey Price and they scoff when people say and the players vote that he's one of the top players in the National Hockey League. But this is prime example of what he does. He's just dialed in the playoffs. And I don't think they really relied on him too heavily, but just the team game starting from the goaltending out. They got four solid defensemen that play heavy, nasty hockey. And I don't think the fans like to hear this, but, you know, sometimes as a player, it gets too hard out there where you don't really want to go in the corner. You don't really want to go to the net when there's big, nasty guys. And that's how it was when I was playing. Like, I used to hate playing against guys like Andy Sutton, just big D that just chomp you down. And it really, you know, challenges you who you are as a hockey player. And I just think that the Winnipeg Jets got outwilled. They could not get through the neutral zone. They couldn't penetrate. Their special teams weren't special. And Montreal just had guys clicking. Who would have thought their fourth line would have stepped up and scored some big, big goals? So that's what the playoffs is all about. Unsung heroes, good goaltending, good defense. And the Montreal Canadiens are a prime example of that.
Yeah, no, it's I totally agree.
Good night.
All right, that's the show, folks.
Smith and Jones next on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Now, you know, I'll take the Jets angle, just that, you know, they lost game one in a way that, like, could not have been any worse, right? Like, kind of a squeaker. I think the final score was 2-1, 3-1 with a memorable empty netter. But, like, we started talking about Scheifele and DeMello's out, and all of a sudden Scheifele's out. And it just went from, like, already down 1-0 to now being without such integral pieces. The team didn't show any pushback in the sense that they thought they could get it done in the absence of those guys. There didn't seem to be that will or belief that without them they could do it.
You know, one of the things that we marveled at all series long, and we did, you know, going back to the opening round against the Toronto Maple Leafs, was the kids for the Montreal Canadiens. And you're starting to see what the next wave of this team is going to look like now. And by the way, the irony of the winner from the North waiting for everybody else now shouldn't be lost on anybody who's listening to this radio broadcast right now. But now Montreal waits as the North was the last division to get their playoffs started. Kids, man. Like, Price was a story, absolutely. The blue line was a story as well. But at the end of it, a great goal by Tyler Toffoli. And man, did he pound that thing in hard last night. Like, Toffoli banged that pass in. But again, it's a nifty play from someone we can see being, you know, a consistent, you know, 35-goal, 70-point player for the majority of his career in Cole Caulfield. And one of the stories here, Stewie, for the Montreal Canadiens is the emergence, because it's always the playoffs where players emerge and prove themselves, of Cole Caulfield, Jesperi Kotkaniemi, and Nick Suzuki. Your thoughts on the three kids?
Yeah, I'll start off by Caulfield. He's a special player, and he's like the leader of the new school type of players. Like, Kopp comes in, leads with his stick, plays it perfectly, and Caulfield's like, okay, see you, old man. I'm going to poke this by you, make a pass. He's just been great, a threat to score every time he's on the ice, and he wants to shoot the puck almost through the goalie. I think he's got to get a little bit more accurate. But Suzuki and Kotkaniemi, this should be the blueprint of how to bring along your prospects and get them meaningful games. There's been other teams, especially in this division, where the young guys haven't been really put in a position to succeed, and they're delayed. You know, you're looking at, you know, Caulfield now. He started the year off, played World Juniors, got his confidence up, you know, had a good tournament, went to University of Wisconsin, scored 30 goals. And, you know, you're looking at other teams where we're still waiting for prospects to get over the hump. So you've got to find a way to build them into your roster because they're the future of your organization. So people are saying the future's is looking pretty bleak for Montreal. But with Kazuo Suzuki, Kotkaniemi, and, you know, some of these younger guys, it's definitely going to be bright for the Montreal Canadiens because they're contributing on a nightly basis.
Yeah, I mean, that the Caulfield one seems different to me than the other two guys. Like, not that the other two guys are... Sorry, I don't even want to lump Suzuki in there. I'm not sure that Kotkaniemi is as huge a piece as Suzuki and Caulfield. Like, Caulfield is special. And I know he hasn't poured the puck in the net. He hasn't scored yet in the postseason. But there's something there. He's dynamic. The way he jumped by to create that goal last night and wrung a couple off the post. Something there. And Suzuki, we talked about, Jeff, as a guy that could be in the Patrice Bergeron mold by the time his career reaches its peak. So two very special players.
And, you know, now that this second round is done and winning goal, not just for the game, but for the Scotia North Division, scored by Tyler Toffoli, if there was ever any doubt, and you know Toffoli, Stewie, if there was ever any doubt that Toffoli was the best off-season signing by any team in the NHL, last night should have just removed all doubt. Big game player, has filled the net all season long. You know, I don't want to turn this into a, you know, pile on Jim Benning and the Vancouver Canucks, but that's one that just flat out got away. And that's one that got to Montreal and then just started making red lights go off. Your thoughts on Tyler Toffoli, Stewie?
Yeah, I look at his cap hit, $4.5 million for 4 years. I'm like, who's his agent? He should have really bet on himself and only took a 1 year deal, but that's neither here nor there. But, you know, I think he's one of those guys that, you know, players like that should be, you know, prized acquisitions on July 1 because he's won. You know, he knows what it takes. And I've played with this kid, you know, in Manchester, his first year pro, and he was scoring goals like that as a rookie in the minors, where I'm huffing and puffing up and down the right side wing, you know, with 300 games under my belt. So he's one of those players, a big game player. I'm not surprised. And I think I said it when they signed him, especially to that cap hit, that I don't think really that, you know, anyone knew he was going to be that good, but I knew it from what I've seen before.
You have a thought on Toffoli here, Borny?
Yeah, he's been awesome. Just such a... everything he hits hard, like you mentioned that, but like there are some guys who the puck never seems to bobble, like it seems to be flat when it gets to them every time, but it's not the case. He just is able to smooth everything out. You know, Bieksa had a nice bit on him about just being a hockey player. Like, yeah, the shorty he scored was not like he beat anyone up the rink or anything. He's not afraid to have the puck and be in the moment and get to the spots, and just a true hockey player, valuable asset for the Canadiens.
You know, I know that he dominated against the Vancouver Canucks this year. That's a story that's been well told. But, you know, going back to junior when he played with Ottawa, he would torture the Peterborough Petes. Like, the percentage of goals that he scored in his career in the OHL against the Peterborough Petes is obscene. For whatever reason, he loved playing that team. Didn't mind playing in that barn, which, Stewie, you played in that barn. It's more of a box. Those corners, like, you're rimming around and coming back out in front of the net.
Yeah, they got square
Peterborough's
boards.
Like, right? It's crazy. And
are they fixed those yet or no?
No, man. That's home ice advantage, bud. Come on, man.
What a league.
I love Rick's little personality.
Yeah, exactly. You know, to be honest with you, and this is for a summer conversation on a day where there's no games, the idea of home ice advantage and what it can mean anymore when every rink just is exactly the same. I've always been one of those people that's lobbied against that. But I think you should be able to have even your own dimensions. You know, it shouldn't be a standard 200 by 85. But if you want to do a 180 by 80, go for it. I'm fine with it.
Can I talk about Kingston's rink? Oh, well, I'll tell that story later on a summer day. Don't worry.
Okay. All right. We'll do that one on a summer show. Ken Weeb's joining us, who covers the Winnipeg Jets for Sportsnet at sportsnet.ca. Ken, thanks so much, as always, for stopping by. I'm sure you've been asked this going back to last night, and maybe there's an answer and maybe there isn't, but we're all asking the same thing. How can a team that did that to the Oilers have that done to them by the Habs?
Yeah, great question, Jeff. It has been a frequent topic of conversation for sure. The angst level obviously high among the Jets fan base. The offensive well just ran dry, guys. I mean, 6 goals in 4 games, only 4 of which came at even strength, and 3 of them were scored by defensemen named Logan Stanley and Derek Forbert. You need those unsung heroes, but the big guns did not perform in this round. No points for Blake Wheeler, Kyle Connor, just the one extra attacker goal. Nikolai Ehlers, I thought, was flying, but just had the one assist. So, I mean, for the second year in a row when the Jets lost Mark Scheifele, obviously different circumstances, but losing their top center, you know, kind of exposed their offensive game. And on the flip side, you guys touched on it right out of the gate. I mean, the Canadiens played a suffocating brand of hockey. They're so aggressive at the defensive blue line, and their big, strong defensemen keep the Jets out of the blue paint. So the other part of that, they're a speed team, and they were not able to generate any speed and couldn't score off the rush. And all the things they did with puck management in the first round against Edmonton to limit the attack of McDavid and Draisaitl, they did not do that at all. They were not patient. And all that Maurice said before the series started, the team that is truest to its identity would win the series, and he was bang on. But I don't think he was expecting that team to be the Montreal Canadiens.
Stewie.
One player that had high expectations was Pierre-Luc Dubois, and he seemed to struggle the whole entire series. What did you notice in his game, and was there any possibilities that he was playing hurt or injured?
Yes, Stewie, for me, I think there has to be an injury. You guys saw how he played in the bubble and, you know, watch how he skate. This is a powerful man. This is a strong skater who just was unable to generate much speed in this series. I mean, 24 games without a goal is, for a guy who plays in the top six, is almost unheard of, right, guys? I mean, this is a guy, the Jets weren't expecting to have a hat trick every game like he did against the Leafs in the bubble. But this is a guy that can have a physical impact. He's a big, strong guy. Part of the problem for Dubois, he never really found chemistry with any line mates. He played center, he played left wing, he played right wing. In the series alone, he played on the first, second, third, and fourth lines, 3 of which came in one game. And he puts a lot of pressure on himself. There's no doubt about that. There were extremely high expectations. I expect we'll see a completely different player in the fall, much like I expect the same thing to Patrick Laine. I don't expect Patrick Laine to struggle next year, and I don't expect Pierre-Luc Dubois to struggle next year. But it was a tough goal for him. There's no sugarcoating it, and there's no way around it. He did not live up to expectations. He's still a young player, and I expect great things from him moving forward, but it was a tough goal for him. I mean, there's no doubt about it. He didn't get going. And then, too, not only when you're not contributing offensively, then to take a couple of, you know, undisciplined penalties at critical times, that just showed the frustration to me of a guy who never really got fully comfortable. We know he went through a lot this year. Trade demand, contract issues, quarantine, injured in a second game. For me, I think he just never got his stride back, even though he had an impact at certain times. I mean, he had 2 overtime goals, but he just never got to the best version of Pierre-Luc Dubois this year.
Yeah, I'm with you. I know how it is when you go through a tough stretch, and I think he'll be back. He only makes $5 million too as a prime, you know, prime player. So, you know, when an upset like that happens, I shouldn't call it an upset, but a disappointment like that happens, we're left talking about what went wrong. And so, looking at next year for this team, there's some great contracts for this team. Like Ehlers has a great deal, and he's going to be around. Scheifele's on a good deal. Kyle Connor's worth his money. Blake Wheeler's the guy that, you know, he makes $8.25 million until 2024, and there are question marks about his decline in play. What can you tell us about where he's at in his career and how much this past series was reflective of that, or maybe it wasn't at all?
Yeah, it's odd, Justin. I mean, obviously Blake Wheeler was under the microscope pretty heavily this year. We know Paul Maurice had the vehement defense, and later on we find out he was playing with fractured ribs. But it's interesting. I mean, Wheeler ended up being pretty close to a 20-game player again this year, so
sure,
his production increased as the year went on, and Wheeler was excellent against Edmonton. I agree. I don't think he nearly got to his game against the Montreal Canadiens, but still, I mean, of course, Father Time is undefeated, but Blake's a guy who's a smart player. He can contribute. He's still a great distributor of the puck on the power play. I think he's still going to be a productive player in that regard, but at some point we're going to see that change where Blake Wheeler becomes the second line center and Nikolaj Ehlers gets bumped to the top line minutes that he is deserving of because of his ability to impact the game in so many areas with his dynamic speed, his ability to draw penalties, his, you know, he's a zone entry machine, all of those things. So, I mean, I understand that some folks are looking at the contract, but I have to remind folks that Blake Wheeler played on an he overperformed his contract for a lot of years with the Winnipeg Jets. So, yes, we know it's a time when players are being paid on potential instead of past production, but I think Wheeler will continue to be an important player, but I think there is going to be a, you know, a shift in terms of roles and responsibilities as we move along here.
With Ken Wiebe, covers the Winnipeg Jets for Sportsnet at sportsnet.ca. Get a couple things out of the way here. Any changes, bench, front office? Just clear that up right away before we move on to players and get back to players.
Yeah, sure, Jeff. I mean, I don't anticipate a change happening. Yes, I understand there is a lot of clamoring among the fan base. The three series wins in 10 years under Kevin Cheveldayoff's watch. I know that that's not a large number, and the bigger number is only one series win since going to the conference final in 2018. But I don't anticipate a change happening at the top. And in terms of Paul Maurice, yes, we know he's the second longest tenured head coach behind John Cooper. We know there were some struggles down the stretch, losing 9 of 12 and 7 in a row. But, I mean, this is how I would say it, Jeff. For a team that was going into the season as a bubble team, they won a playoff round. So does that mean you didn't meet expectations? I mean, to me, I don't see a change happening unless the caveat would be if the exit meetings suggest otherwise. But, I mean, we heard from Paul Stastny and Blake Wheeler late in the year. He still has the ear of his veteran players. I think there may have to be some tactical adjustments for Paul Maurice. And much like you guys were talking about with Montreal, there's a couple prospects that need to be in the lineup next year, and Billy Hainala and Dylan Sandberg. And Paul needs to get to the point where he's comfortable having a defense corps that includes those two plus Logan Stanley, who is probably one of the bigger developments for the Jets this year. And I'm not just saying that because he had two goals last night. This is a guy who came a long way over the course of the year. But if you're not comfortable having half of your defense corps being young players, then one of those players has to be moved for an experienced defenseman to bolster an obvious area of need, which was, again, exposed after the loss of Dylan DeMello just 29 seconds into this series.
Ken, give us a sense as well of how the market feels about Mark Scheifele, like one of the most beloved Winnipeg Jets without a doubt. The suspension really sort of dismantled a lot, and this is the second season in a row no Mark Scheifele or a Mark Scheifele situation in the postseason. One was an injury, one was a suspension. How does the market feel about double nickels right now?
Yeah, I think they feel for Mark, first and foremost, for what Mark shared about how the ridiculous online bullying and attacks his family had to endure in the aftermath of the suspension. Obviously, it was a divisive play, and it had people on both wide ends of the spectrum. Mark, we know Mark is not a dirty player. He is a very genuine person. I think in his mind, he still believed he was trying to prevent the goal, but I think that he made a split-second decision that had serious consequences. I think that it was a ferocious back check, but if you finish that hit, you have to finish it through the body. You can't finish it through the chin. But I think in terms of the fan base, there's nothing lost for Scheifele. He's still a beloved player. I think the majority of folks believe the suspension was too stiff, and some went as far as to say it was a clean hit, which, again, that's up for interpretation and debate. I don't think that there was any malice or intent to injure, but I think there had to be consequences. And the unfortunate part for the Jets fan base is that they saw the league taking an opportunity to set a precedent. But when it comes to player safety, a stiff precedent is something that was overdue. And I think this is not a two wrongs don't make a right situation, but I think that the league had to come down heavily. And was it too heavily? I mean, that will be something that will be up for debate for quite some time.
You mentioned Logan Stanley, who had a great last 2 months of the season for the Jets. Jets have some difficult decisions to make with the expansion draft coming up. Do you see him being protected, and what would you see his next contract looking like?
Yes, it's a great question. It's been one that's been up for debate. I mean, it's twofold. I mean, the Jets have made a significant investment in Logan Stanley's development. They knew he came into the organization as more of a project player that was going to take some time. And at a time where the Jets had been graduating first-round picks within a year or two with great happening almost regularity, I guess, if you will. I have to say, you know, we know that Josh Morrissey and Neil Pionk are going to be protected. So the third spot comes down to Dylan DeMello and Logan Stanley. I mean, Dylan DeMello played at the end of the year on the first line and really helped stabilize Josh Morrissey. So right now, it's a coin flip. I think that the Jets will try to find a way to keep both of them. We know that defense is not a position of strength, so if that means making a side deal, we know last time the Jets were able to make one that didn't hurt their roster. But as you guys were talking about before, that constant reminder of the player who was chosen with the 13th overall pick when the Jets chose to move down with Vegas in order to protect Toby Enstrom's contract was none other than Nick Suzuki, a guy who may have been able to solve the second line center issues a little bit earlier for the Jets. So to me right now, Mason Appleton is the likely candidate to be chosen. I mean, he had a great year, I believe 13 goals, really good third line player who played up a little bit, but I can't say with certainty right now if it's Stanley or DeMello, but I would think that right now DeMello is a guy, if you're a first pairing guy, I think he probably has to be protected, and the Jets will try to find a way to keep Stanley if they can.
So reflecting on this roster heading into next year, I still think there's lots of great pieces here. What do you see in terms of changes? Like when they suit up at the start of next season, do you think there's going to be much overturn of this roster? Do you think they'll look similar? I know Shovel Day Off doesn't tend to make too many changes all at once, but it might be time for a little bit of alteration to that plan, no?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point, Justin. I mean, here's the other thing. I mean, so everyone was clamoring for the Jets to make a trade, and now the trade that they made didn't necessarily pan out with immediate fruit. So I do think that there's going to be some, you know, reconstruction of the roster. But, I mean, how do you do that? Number one, defensemen don't grow on trees, right? So and in order to get one, you would have to trade someone like Kyle Connor. What were we just talking about the series? The Jets couldn't score a goal. So now you're going to trade a 40-goal scorer for a number one D-man? Well, now who's going to fill the 40 goals that you just traded out the door? I mean, it's a real big conundrum for NHL general managers, right? And not only, as you mentioned, I mean, that contract and term that he has, that AAV number, can you find a number one defenseman who has a similar AAV number and has team control for, you know, five more seasons? I mean, what team is going to give that player away? I mean, it's a really interesting scenario coming up. I mean, the Jets have David Gustafson. They have to find a way to get him into the lineup in that 4C slot. Locking up Adam Lowry prior to getting the UFA status was critical. But they've got two big RFA signings that they need to get taken care of, with Neil Pionk on the back end and Andrew Kopp up front, coming off a career year where he had 15 goals. And, I mean, the Seattle expansion looming, that's going to impact the decisions. And we know that, I mean, Paul Maurice, they'll probably be looking to add a veteran piece. But I think they are going to change the mix a bit, but I don't see them blowing up the core, especially not with Connor Hellebuck in net. I mean, they still have one of the best goalies in the NHL. Goal saves, goal saved above expectation, still through the roof in these playoffs. And he was the only reason that this series was close, even though it was still a sweep.
With Ken Weeb, and Ken, you know, the Scotia North Division was a unique opportunity for a lot of teams who looked at it as, I know the Maple Leafs certainly felt this way, I'm sure Montreal, Edmonton all felt this way, like all the teams really, that this was going to be the quote-unquote easiest way to get to the Final Four. This was going to be the easiest chance. So next season, the Winnipeg Jets go back to a division that now includes Arizona, we should point out, but also Chicago, Colorado, Dallas, a very much improved Minnesota, Nashville, we'll see if what we saw at the end was real, the St. Louis Blues as well. How do you see Winnipeg? Again, we don't know what Shovel Dayoff's going to do in the offseason, so maybe it's just even miserable of me to even ask this question, but how do you see Winnipeg fitting into that mix? There's some big teams there, and they're going back to it.
Yeah, no doubt, Jeff. I mean, it's a great question for sure. I do still see the Jets as a, you know, team on the periphery. They're a bubble team going into next year. You know, I don't think that we can suggest that they're, you know, obviously we know the Colorado Avalanche are going to be the front runners. The Minnesota Wild, much improved, as you mentioned. There is going to be a group of teams in that, you know, 3-5 or 3-6 grouping that all have, you know, extremely strong core, but have some flaws. And until some of those, much like the North, where the flaws get exposed for both Toronto and Winnipeg in rounds 1 and 2, respectively, They're going to have to tighten up a few of those holes in the roster and, you know, augment some things and hope that there's some internal development from some of those young prospects. I mean, we saw flashes from a Christian Vesalainen in this series, but he needs to become a regular. I mean, like I mentioned, Gustafsson and Heinola and Sandberg. I mean, these guys will help improve the roster, but I think they got to find that value kind of free agent to kind of help give them a bump. And like I said, I don't think there'll be an overhaul of the roster, but I think there need to be some improvements in order for the Jets to maintain a playoff position in the Central Division.
Excellent. Ken, thanks as always for stopping by. We really appreciate it. Great work. Continued success. And we'll check in regularly on what should be a very interesting offseason in Winnipeg for Kevin Cheveldayoff and crew. Thanks as always, Ken. Much appreciated.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me. I promise I won't ask for a loan when I'm home from college, but I may ask for the car keys.
Thanks,
that's right. He's back. He's back. Thanks, Ken. Much appreciated.
Have a great day, guys.
There he is, Ken Weeb. And, you know, I can't help but wondering as well, and I'm sure Winnipeg Jets fans don't want to hear it. I'm curious what you guys think about all this. As much as we talk about Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler and what Nick Ehlers has become in the NHL and how good Josh Morrissey has been and the emergence of Neil Pionk, I don't know that the Winnipeg Jets have ever gotten over the loss of Dustin Byfuglien. Like, we treat it like it's a million years ago. It's not. Like, because he is such a, and sorry, he was such a unique force on any team that he played on, and specifically Winnipeg. I don't know that this team, and I'll just throw it out there, have at it. Has this team ever recovered from losing Byfuglien?
You know, I don't think you ever recover from just losing someone so impactful like that. You know, you look around the league and try to think of people who impacted hockey games in such a meaningful way.
Oh, my God,
obviously,
Byfuglien.
Oh. Yeah, you started like the elite forwards, the McDavid, McKinnons, whatever. But then I think of guys like Zdeno Chara, you know, the way you play physical, still create offense, intimidate people. Like, not many people had the total package like Byfuglien. So certainly you can't just take that away and act like it's no big deal. It hurts in a major way.
What do you think, Stewie?
Yeah, I don't think people really understand like how dominant he was and how big and strong he was. And when he wanted to, he'd just say, yeah, you know what, I'm going to go for a skate down, take over the game. And the best feat of strength that I've ever seen was Eric Bolton, who's probably one of the toughest guys of all time, decided to challenge Buff to a wrestling match in the hotel one night. And when I say he picked him up and tossed him like a five-year-old child, he tossed him across the room, and the whole room was like, oh, my gosh. So when he wanted to, he could dominate physically. And coming from a guy that's eaten a couple, you know, shots in the chest or you know, just missing my head, he had a bomb. I don't think there's a guy that can shoot as hard as him. And I had to stand in front of that net on the power play. He's got a bomb. So he was probably one of a kind in NHL history. And I think everybody, the league, is missing Dustin Byfuglien.
I miss him. I think we all do. You know,
I hope he's happy, Jeff. I mean that sincerely. Like, I love the idea of just being like, I don't want to do it anymore. My body is not.
There's two guys that know where he is, and they will not divulge. I heard one is Andrew Ladd, and one is Chris Versteeg. Supposedly, my brother lives on the same lake as him as Minnesota, and it's within 5 miles. My brother doesn't even know where he is.
Chris doesn't know.
You're listening? No, my brother doesn't know.
Buff's not listening. Buff is fishing. He doesn't care about us or hockey. He's gone. He's left us. What's his name? Matt Damon in Good Will Hunting. He's just over being here. He's left. He's out saying goodbye.
Just like J.D. Salinger writes Catcher in the Rye and then vanishes. I'll tell you what, guys. There is something. Like, haven't you guys thought about that? Like, isn't that really tempting just to one day?
No, because I've never done anything meaningful, Jeff. No one will notice.
Like I have? Like, seriously.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll move on then. One more thought before we hit a break and come back and talk about the rest of the playoff situations. What do you guys see happening in Winnipeg this offseason? Like, there's a lot of reason you could point. You say, well, listen, DeMello was hurt and we didn't have Scheifele. Give us a break. And then you come back, you know, certainly with some massaging around the fringes, but no really big change. Now, we know that Cheveldayoff tried to bring in Jamie Oleksiak at the trade deadline. That didn't happen for whatever reason. Bernie, we'll start with you. What do you think happens with Winnipeg this offseason?
Well, I don't think you can have such an obvious flaw as their D group and not try to do something a little bit aggressive. I will say it's been my critique of Kevin Sheveldayoff in the past is that I haven't thought that he's been aggressive enough, because I really like some of the pieces they have, and I just felt like, man, this feels like a group so close. If you got really aggressive and made a big move or two, you could maybe push it over the hump. So whatever it is they have to do to make the defense better, that has to happen. It's just that their forwards are too good to waste it, and a lot of them are getting older, like Wheeler and Scheifele.
Yeah, I'll just say, again, I know there's high expectations, but I'm surprised they haven't made a move at management or coaching level. I remember being in Florida, and I think in the span of 4 years, I had Rick Dudley as a GM, then I had Mike Keenan as a GM, then I had Jacques Martin as a coach / GM, and we were like last place with zero expectations, and we made those changes. So I couldn't imagine, you know, with this market that Winnipeg's in, that they're, you know, content with just being, you know, okay and not really making some major changes, because I think they're a couple pieces away, and I think they're afraid to really make those changes starting at the top.
I don't know. You mean, so you're talking about more off ice than on ice?
Yeah, I'm mad because Chevy didn't qualify me. I was
okay. There we go.
So I'm biased.
No, but he's not. You're not wrong, Stu. Like, it might take.
He left me in Atlanta, so I'm biased. So don't ask me.
It might take a fresh set of eyes, though, to be like, you know, okay, there's pieces here, but you know, whatever the plan has been has not been executed. And I think you've had enough time. I don't know. It's not. They're not good enough for all the talent they have up front.
Let's hit a break. Got a couple of things to talk about the Islanders and the Boston Bruins. A costly game for the Bruins, both on and off the ice, with a couple of high-profile fines and a big win by the Islanders yesterday, where they chased Tuukka Rask, and that is no small feat. We'll talk Islanders and Bruins next. Also, we get another game between the Avs and the Vegas Golden Knights, as Nazem Kadri's suspension, by the way, has been upheld by the independent arbitrator. It remains at 8 games. He will not be available unless the series goes to 7. And also, the Carolina Hurricanes facing elimination against the defending Stanley Cup champions. We'll try to get to all of this. It's a lot. Next on Hockey Central, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Okay. Lots to get to here. Welcome back to the program. Jeff Merrick alongside Justin Bourne and the returning Anthony Stewart. He's back like a vertebrae. Check him out. Stewie's back on Hockey Central. Islanders and Bruins. Weird that Tuukka Rask got the hook in that one, but probably the right call. Jeremy
they fought calling in. It the hook, though, Jeff.
What's that?
They fought really owning it as a hook. They were like, yeah, he was injured, didn't look quite right. So
yeah,
you pulled him.
Yeah. Although in that game, I'll tell you what, man, Boston ends up losing the game. Look at the Islanders go. But that Brad Marchand goal was pretty sick. Like, we talked to Billy Jaffe the other day, Borny, about, you know, what's the most impressive thing about Brad Marchand, and I would maintain it's his stick skills. That was it on display, no?
Yeah. Like, I don't know. He's one of those guys that can handle traffic so well. He's just such a smart player. And, yeah, he can execute everything. That was nasty. No doubt about it.
All right. So what did it for you yesterday for the Islanders-Bruins game? It didn't do much for Bruce Cassidy, who's now $25,000 lighter, fined by the NHL for criticizing officials. Stewie, what did you make of the Islanders-Bruins situation?
Yeah, well, I'll start off by saying the Cassidy thing is more semantics, because, again, we know better, because we've had Berkey on this program, and he said he's done it because he wants now the focus to be on the Islanders. But they say what you want. The Islanders are the least penalized team in the National Hockey League during the regular season. They play a hard, in-your-face style games, and I think Boston was guilty of, you know, retaliating. And, you know, at the end of the day, you got to do a better job on your penalty kill, 3 goals against. So right now it's coming down to specialty teams too, and Islanders are winning the battle. But let's talk about how the way that this team has built this Islanders team and continuously year after year just start to contend and in the mix every single year. So when teams are talking about how you build your team, I don't know how the Islanders aren't, you know, one of the blueprints. And, you know, people are saying, oh, Palmieri, he didn't do anything. They brought him in specifically to do what he's doing in these playoffs. He's got 6 goals. Uncle Leo's playing on the top line. Matt Martin's hitting everything that moves, too. So that's the message that I like to send, because, again, whether or not they win it this year, they're always contending because they buy into Barry Trotz's system. And I don't think a lot of credit is given to Trotz. He's a mastermind, and he has to be one of the top NHL coaches for sure, the way that this team's playing.
It is wild to look at the Washington Capitals and be like, if Trotz stays, do they make another run?
Oh boy, yeah. Well, that was a situation that wasn't going to happen. That was.
Was it just money?
Trotz knew. No.
Give him all the money. What do you mean? Why not?
It wasn't just the money. There was conflict there. Like Barry Trotz knew.
Yeah.
That was going to be it.
Well, either way, if they had kept him, that might have been a different past couple years there. But boy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Islanders do what they do. I'd say the standout to me is like their power play scored 3 times, and I don't know if you guys know this, but their power play is not good. So
they scored 3 times on their first 3 power plays, and they only had 4 shots.
I know. Yeah. So the results were good. In general, their power play is not very good, I should say. Scoring 3 is obviously exceptional, but
yeah.
You know, I don't know what to make of the Cassidy comments after the game because. You know, first off, you can't give up 3 PK goals and complain about the reffing. At some point, you got to kill a penalty. But even complaining about the reffing, like, is that the right focus for a team that has their backs against the wall?
Okay, so here's my thought on that. The NHL has put up with it so far this offseason. I'm sure that coaches have been told again, like, hey, cool it, zip it. I mean, you could tell, you know, in that blowout game by Tampa, when Carolina was up and all of a sudden Tampa got a ton of power plays, that Rod Brindamore was probably dying to say something about the officiating after the game, but he had already shot one of those bullets earlier on in the playoffs. So probably realized, oof, I can't do it again. And I'm assuming that all the coaches are told, okay, everyone's got their free lick in. Let's just all put a lid on it now. And Cassidy didn't. And that's why he got dinged.
Yeah, no, that makes a ton of sense.
Doesn't it feel that way? Because there was a string there where every night coaches were blasting officials. And yeah. You're like, whoa, okay, we're waiting for the press release from the NHL, and it's not coming. But I would imagine they've all been told, like, okay, zip it.
I do wonder if the NHL doesn't mind some measure of those kind of comments because the emotion, it's an entertainment business and it's reflective of the emotion these guys are going through and the battle to try and get calls is like that jockeying is kind of a part of the game maybe. But yeah, it reaches a level where you're like, okay, you can't just like trash the officials. You know, it's...
That's why the way Barry Trotz did it on the weekend was brilliant.
Yeah, well, you know what? I've just seen some Cassidy comments this morning as we're talking about this, and it sounds like he was saying his comments were more in reference to those Trotz comments. So those Trotz comments actually got Cassidy fined because he was trying to make a rebuttal about how the Islanders are playing this innocence card. He wasn't even talking about that game so much. Yeah,
yeah, the New York Saints, not the Islanders. Well, Trotz, if anyone missed it...
That should be an XFL name team.
The Saints. the great Trotz, he said, like, he flat out came out and said, like, look, Patrice Bergeron cheats in the faceoffs, but then went quickly, you know, pivoted quickly and said, it's a good thing we have such great officials because I'm sure they'll catch that. Like that, I'm sorry, guys, that's a Picasso. Like the knee jerk reaction is just like blast the officials for not catching Patrice Bergeron, if in fact you do think that he cheats on faceoffs. Like, that's just a simple knee-jerk.
I guess you're allowed to criticize your opponent as long as you're not criticizing the officials, and he wasn't.
But he is criticizing the officials, right? And what he's like, look, Bergeron's cheating. It's obvious to everyone. But then comes back with a backhanded compliment. But I'm sure these officials, who are all great, are going to catch that. Like, honestly, like, that's how you do it. Like, that's...
Cassidy got it wrong, for sure.
Yeah.
But if I'm a coach right now, I know the league is on high alert. We've had 2 major injuries where guys had to be carted off. You have to talk to your team and saying, hey, you know what? The next penalty is coming on us, or you have to tighten the ship. So you have to let your team know, like, hey, guys, they're going to be looking. So it's a more of a discipline thing, and I'm looking at the penalties now, slashing, cross-checking, you know, high sticking. Those are avoidable penalties. I don't see any roughings or anything like that, too. So those stick penalties, I don't really have any sympathy for, because those are easily avoidable.
So this is Lou Lamoriello.
And you know what? And you know why? Sorry, quickly here. And you know why? Because they're on high alert because Marchand, has he not been flinging his stick and putting sticks in people's faces since the first round, too? So that's partly to blame, too. You got to blame Marchand for that, I think.
Since he broke in the league, Stewie. That's not this round. Since he started. That's going back to when he played in the queue.
Touché.
Never mind. This is Lou Lamoriello's New York Islanders. Make no mistake about it. And you see his fingerprints all over the lineup. I just wonder, And like let me give you some context here. So Berkey would always mention, sure, he was the general manager when the Anaheim Ducks won the Stanley Cup in 2007. But he said, look, a lot of that heavy lifting was done by Brian Murray. And I was sort of sitting on the shoulders of a lot of the work that did that came before me. How much do we look at this Islanders team and say, yes, this is Lou Lamoriello's, but we should at least nod or acknowledge what Garth Snow did to put some of these players here? Most notably, Matthew Barzal and Anthony Beauvillier. And that was all done with one trade, Griffin Reinhart to the Edmonton Oilers for 16 and 33.
Wild. That is
how
wild.
How much do you look at Garth Snow and say, you know what, he's not going to get a ring if the Islanders do this, but man, his fingerprints are everywhere on this Islanders team.
Yeah, you have to appreciate it. It's funny, too, because, like, you know, Lou could come in and get rid of those guys if he doesn't like them, but he clearly likes having that element of speed and skill. I think those guys are as integral to that team, probably yes. More integral than anyone, because as Barry Trotz puts it, they're absolute burners. So I think when you defend the Isles, they have, like, a knuckleball off-speed pitch sort of thing where when a guy touches the puck, you don't know if he's going to skate like Leo Komarov or if it's going to be Anthony Beauvillier, who's just a bolt of lightning. You know, so it's tough to gap up and plan for this team because they're not all slow or all fast. You get a real mix of speeds, and then they use it to their advantage.
What do you think of the Islanders? Like the composition
credit to Lou now. Well, I was going to say credit to Lou now, you know, keeping Barzal. You know, everyone thought Barzal was going to get all the money, break the bank at $10.5 million. He's at a cap hit for another 2-3 years. Bringing in Pageot at the deadline, how many times have a guy been brought in at the deadline and it hasn't really been a great deal at all? He came in, signed an extension, and delivered right away. Zajac's doing all right. They're bringing in Palmieri, right? So all these guys now that he's bringing in, it's calculated positions coming in to play a specific role, and they're doing it. So, you know, we talk about roster composition, you know, the fourth line starting every single night. They're not playing garbage minutes. They're contributing on every single, you know, time they're on the ice too. So I like the roster composition top to bottom. This is a team, and I use the term team or club. This is a team for sure.
All the forwards, everybody's in double digits. Nobody's in the 20s. Like the defensemen are. The big four are in the 20s, right? Palak and Pulak and Letty and Mayfield, they're all in the 20s. But all the forwards, who leads an ice time here? Barzal, 18-21 average.
18-21.
No, sorry, Josh Bailey, 18-30. There you go, by a hair. He's got him beat. That's it.
That's pretty wild.
No guys at 25 minutes?
No forwards.
No 24 minutes or 25 minutes? No?
No forwards, Stewie. No, sir. No, just keeping them all a shade under. And even that fourth line.
The game's the same.
Yeah, Barzal's a little... He looks pretty fresh when he's out there to me.
He really does. Do we see a closeout tonight between Tampa and Carolina? Now, a couple of things for Carolina. Nino Niederreiter, Vincent Trocheck, upper body for Niederreiter, lower body for Trocheck. Rod Brindamore is saying he is hopeful for them. We'll see about Warren Fogle, who's out as well with the upper body as well. Carolina and the defending Stanley Cup champions. We could see handshakes tonight, Justin Bourne. Do we?
Yeah, I'm going to say it happens. You know, I just feel like this Tampa Bay team, since playoffs have started, have found the team that they were the previous season. You know, Kucherov, obviously a big part of that, but it just there seems sort of be this rallying together for this next push and this defense of their title. The Colorado-Vegas series is fantastic. If we can get Tampa on the way through to the final, boy, would we have some sort of matchup out of those three teams.
Stewie?
I hope they win because I just want to see Borny's father-in-law crush another beer figuratively and literally on his head. So I'm rooting for the Islanders because I like that. That's old-time hockey right there.
I tell you what, a lot of people think my father-in-law is intimidating or would be intimidating to have because he's tough, but it's not. He's intimidating because he's so much cooler than me. How do you keep up with that?
If I was like half as cool as Clark Gillies, like at his age, like when I'm his age, if I'm half as cool as Clark Gillies, which I won't be, man, my life is a success.
Jeff, you're not now. I don't. You would have to make some gains to get to half as cool now.
So Jeff is the guy that Jeff's the guy that missed the high five, eh? That's Jeff.
Yeah.
That's me. No. Yeah, just cheer with the crowd, like, hey,
you know what? I think that was
but
my
the
boy,
best
Paul
part
Patter
about
Noster,
them.
So shout out to him. Anyway,
Borny, you pointed this out on Twitter as well. So the guy misses the high five, and your father-in-law's reaction is, well, slam the can into my forehead again.
Yeah, listen, if I'm going to be left hanging, I better time to re-bang this can into my head. What a guy. I'm going to visit in August. I can't wait.
It's so awesome.
Was that a real can? I want to know that. I want to know. Was that a prop can? Or
it might have been a pre-crushed. I couldn't quite make it out. It would have been very aggressive if he went straight up tall boy to the dome. But, yeah, I don't know.
We need the 30-30. The 30-30.
Yeah, I'll do some digging.
Listen, man, Islanders keep doing this. We're going to have Jethro on the show. I would love to get him on Hockey Central.
Make it happen.
Hit a pause, come back and talk about the Vegas Golden Knights and the Colorado Avalanche. Kadri's suspension upheld. He's served six. He has two more, one of them tonight, as this series is deadlocked to two. So we'll get on the Avs and Knights page here in a couple of moments. Hockey Central, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We're back in a flash. Nazem Kadri's eight-game suspension upheld by an independent arbitrator, so he is unavailable tonight for Game 5. Series tied at 2, Vegas Golden Knights and Kadri's Colorado Avalanche. Stewie, we haven't had you weigh in on this series so far, which really has been an interesting one, and one right now that's been taken over by the Vegas Golden Knights. What strikes you about this series specifically, other than the obvious, which is Vegas just flat-out skating all over the Avs here?
Well, I think after the first two games, everyone thought it was going to be a sweep just based on how, you know, Colorado was just coming out the gate wave and wave after wave. But the one thing I could say, playing for Pete DeBoer, he's very cerebral. He knows how to adjust. And, you know, he's played with teams with half the talent over the years and has been really competitive. So now that he has this talent and this fast-skating, fast-paced team, you know, I think he can outcoach a lot of coaches in the National Hockey League. So I think for Colorado, they're victims of their own spectacularness. I just made that word up. Where they just got to keep it simple. Keep it simple, get back to the bases, pucks in deep if you want to get back and win this series.
Nate McKinnon, 9 points over the first in the first round. He had 4 points in the first two games of the series. Blank the last two nights, -3. It's on the top guys to get it done. He only made 16-43 last game.
Yeah, you've talked a lot about playing at altitude. How much does that weigh into this one game tonight?
I think it matters a lot. Stewie, you played in Colorado. Isn't it brutal?
Yeah, I saw Joseph Stempel run into a wall because of the altitude.
Really?
What?
Literally. Yeah.
Can you tell that story?
See you tomorrow. We'll talk about it tomorrow.
It'll get
you.
There's a hook. Tune into Hockey Central tomorrow to hear the Joseph Stempel runs into a wall story. What a hook.